This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers produce over 600 varieties, types, and styles of cheese. That's twice as much as any other state. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague. I'm here in New Orleans, Louisiana at Tales of the Cocktail 2019 with my dear friend, Nicola Risk, the European brand ambassador for the Macallan Scotch Whiskey. Nicola, welcome to my makeshift studio.
Hi, Souther. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's good to see you.
It's really good to see you, too.
I don't get to see you enough anymore now that you live in Madrid, Spain.
I know. That's why I love events like these that bring us all together and we have a chance to catch up.
Yeah. Really stoked to see you here at Tales of the Cocktail. And I didn't realize you had such a role this year. You're on the new committee that decides about all the educational seminars that go on at Tales, and there's like nearly 100 of them this year, right?
There are, I want to say, nearly 75.
Yeah, okay.
That's nearly 100. Yeah. And, but it's this entire year is packed with activities. And I have been, it's kept my days very, very busy, but I'm absolutely loving it. There's the newly formed education committee with 24 of us on the committee. It's broken down into three different sections with 8 people on each one. So culture, business, and then beyond the bar.
And I know you well enough to know your culture.
I am culture, yes.
What does culture cover?
Culture. So culture covers the more classic seminars in terms of cocktails and spirits and trends and whatnot. And so you know how I'm always, when I'm at Tales during the daytime, I'm always in a classroom. And it's one of the things that I absolutely love about Tales of the Cocktail is the education. And so to be involved in that on the committee and part of the process and then see everything come to life is really, really, really special. It's a great committee.
As long as I've known you, you've definitely been a seeker of education.
Yes.
We met years ago when you were working for USBG in New York. And now you've gone on and carried on with your whiskey education. And then I saw even that while you were living in Madrid, you went to some olive oil education.
You just
want to know things is what's going on.
In my free time, I love learning. I really do. I'm passionate about learning as a whole. And what's really funny is sometimes I'm so focused on whiskey that, just when your head is focused on spirits all the time, this past year I decided to branch out and explore, push my nose and push my brain in different directions, and it brought me to olive oil. And the irony of studying extra virgin olive oil is that I end up comparing it to whiskey. I end up comparing it to distillation. I end up comparing it to, not distillation, but basically the process of taking raw materials and making something really wonderful.
And consumable.
Yes, and also that there are elements like blending, and then there's also a sensory process involved with olive oil, just as there is with whiskey making. And so I didn't know that going into it. Olive oil, just moving to Spain, I'm a big fan of all things Mediterranean, the Mediterranean diet, and all things Spanish, honestly. I mean, let's be real. If you've been to Spain and you've experienced the food and the culture and everything, you know that it's absolutely...
My last trip to Spain, the gin tonic literally changed my DNA.
See? There you go.
I came back a different person.
Yeah. So with the gin tonics, with the... I'm a vegetarian, but people always rave about the jamón, of course. But for me, it was all about the olives, the sherry, the flamenco, all of the Spanish culture. And so since moving to Spain, I started exploring all of that because it's...
Because there wasn't enough culture in New York City for you.
It's just... It's different though, and what's unique about Spain is really all of the different regions are so unbelievably different. Most people just think Barcelona and Madrid, but if you go out exploring into all of the different towns, all of the different parts of Spain, it's so rich and so vibrant, and there's different language, there's different foods, there's different different drinks, different dances, different everything to appreciate. And so olive oil happened to be one of those things I discovered. I've always liked olives, but it was incorporated into my diet, I guess, differently living in Spain. And I literally Googled. I was like, olive oil class Spain. And this olive oil sommelier course came up in Valencia.
Olive oil sommelier.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
Yeah. And they were like, do you want to do...
So they're tying the two words together. Just in their title. It's food and drink right there.
But they asked me, they said, do you want to do a certificate or would you like to do a full diploma? And I was like, full diploma. I had no idea what I was signing up for. But I was like, let's do that. And so I did. And it honestly changed my life. And
So now you're an olive oil sommelier? You've got the title or what
have
you?
Olive oil sommelier, yeah. But I've also gone out and worked with master millers in their... in their factories, in their mills, milling olives, producing olive oil. So I've gone out and worked with them in various parts of Spain. I've got friends now who are making olive oil in Italy, in Portugal, in Morocco, all over the place. So this year, I'm really excited for autumn because I'm planning on making a trip to Italy for harvest and tasting more olive oil. And
this is great because it ties in pretty well with what you do, right? You travel a fair amount already because of your job with Lee McAllen.
Yes.
And so that means that you can kind of keep on pursuing this because of just the very nature of your work takes you around, right?
Yeah. And then what's great is also living in Europe, it's very easy to bounce around to different countries. And so in my free time, it's like, all right, let's take a 3-day weekend and head over to Italy and go and explore olive oil. Why not?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the beauty of that region, of being able to do that over in Madrid.
Let's roll the clock back a little bit and talk about, you know, earlier, Nicola. You toured around the world already. You worked with Cirque du Soleil.
I did, yeah.
What was your position there?
Oh, so I started off with Cirque back in 2006. I first worked with them in marketing. And then I moved over to tour services management. So when I was doing marketing work, I was working through one of their sponsors, one of their partners, and the general manager on tour. He said, "Hey, I like your style. I like the work that you're doing, and I'd love for you to come to Montreal and help build out a tour with us." And to be given the opportunity to go and build a tour from scratch with Cirque du Soleil is an opportunity that people who work for Cirque, they want that their entire career, the opportunity to build a tour, to be a part of a creation. And so I jumped at the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so I jumped in and took on the role of tour services coordinator, which was something I'd never done before and learned along the way. But I mean, you learn how to drive forklifts and load and unload 60 semi-trucks. And I know.
Well, there's that passion for learning again, right?
Yeah. So
it's been with you all along.
Yeah. I also had a small part with the clowns.
I was about to say you performed a bit too, right?
Yeah. They had a small role.
You strike me as a clown.
Thanks. I've studied clowning actually, and that's a whole other story. You know, I worked as an actor for years in New York, and when everyone was like, "You should be doing soap operas," I was like, "I'm going to go take a clown class and then do Shakespeare this summer. That's what I'm going to do." And they were like, "Nicola," and those were the things that I mean. Again, Shakespeare, it's really nerdy and wonderful language. Ugh. And just fantastic. And then clowning is terrifying. And so that's why
Clowns are terrifying to a lot of people.
No, not clowns.
Oh, right, right.
I love clowns. I love a good clown. Charlie Chaplin was a clown.
I'm teasing you.
You know, Laurel and Hardy, clowns.
Yeah, of course.
And like brilliant. Three Stooges, clowns.
Absolutely.
And like, I adore clowns. But clowning itself, studying clowning, I'm not a funny person. I don't think I'm funny at all. And I'm not. I'm really, like, I am the person who, if you ask me to tell a joke, I can't. I can't tell a joke to save my life because I can't remember punchlines. And so
you got the other problem. Most people remember the punchline only.
No, it's true. And so years ago, so I've done clown classes. I did a stand-up class years ago with, do you know who Louis Black is?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Oh, so Lou, years ago, I took a stand-up class with Lou, And I did it because I thought it sounded like the scariest thing I could ever possibly put myself through.
Pretty intimidating.
And terrifying. And you had to apply for the class. And he was only accepting 15 of us, and there were hundreds of applicants. And I literally wrote on there, like, I can't tell a joke to save my life, and this is the scariest thing I think one of the scariest things I'm ever doing. And he looked at my application and was like, oh, we gotta take this girl on. And
you put yourself in a position of vulnerability, and that's a very learning mind, right?
Yeah, it was great. It was amazing. In the end, you learn that comedy is all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And
wordsmithing, choosing the right words, calculating.
Lou taught us how to tell stories and how to actually be able to evaluate each other's stories also and see where the ha-ha lies in there, like what is funny, and then where you're like, oh, that doesn't work, edit that out, but keep on going with this. And I learned a lot through that experience as well. We had to actually, at the very end of the course, get up in front of all of hundreds of people, our colleagues and friends, and do our best 3 to 5 in front of everyone. And so I had to get up and do my stand-up routine, which don't ever ask me to do that. But
did you get a couple laughs, or did you bomb out?
I got a couple laughs.
Well,
so yeah, I did a whole stand-up routine on another life. I was a flight attendant from when I was.
So here again, more travel.
Yeah.
so far your life's all about travel and education.
I've pretty much been on the road since I was 18. It's true. I started with Air Canada when I was 18, but through being a flight attendant, it paid for college. It was an incredible experience. Taught me a lot about hospitality, actually. And in some of the most challenging situations when you're...
Well, sure. If someone at my bar is giving me some trouble, I can now ask them to leave. You can't necessarily do that on a plane.
No, you can't. And you're on and dealing with all different personalities, different people in different situations that have different backgrounds and are under different levels of stress, sometimes for different reasons.
Yeah.
And you have to navigate your way through that. But through all of that, I learned a lot about myself and dealing with different people.
Exactly.
But through that also, there was a lot of comedy. And so that's where the comedy routine came from, because I realized that some of the most severe, dramatic, difficult instances, there's always a little bit of fun. There's always a little bit of humor lying in there somewhere, because that's reality.
Tension.
And, yeah. Well... life is funny. It's, you know, it's about finding those
it's
moments.
Absurd.
Yeah. It's about finding those moments and embracing them and learning from them, right? So
of course.
So I learned about that through comedy as well.
So we've got a running theme so far that you like to travel.
Yeah.
That you like education.
Yes.
That you like olive oil.
Yeah. And yeah.
How did whiskey start to play its role? Where did you step into whiskey?
So whiskey started back in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I really happened upon it by accident, but that's how I ended up. A lot of these things happen by accident, right? Just like olive oil did too.
I think
my curiosity.
We just described that, right? Life's absurd. So everything's an accident, right?
Yeah.
Why are we sitting here with these mics in New Orleans? I don't know. We're just here. We are. But here we are. So let's do it.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Back in 2005, I was working in freelance marketing at the time, and I ended up. Specializing in, with my clients, I ended up specializing in high-end sports cars. I used to work for Porsche, I know. And again, car geek, I know. There is no substitute. It's true. I stare at those cars, the brake calipers, and I love it. the sound of one of those engines, I adore. And then I also ended up specializing in high-end spirits, well-made spirits. And through that, I was introduced to Scotch whiskey. And I am a Canadian with Scottish roots. And in Canada, we talk about our roots all the time.
I have Scottish roots too.
Do you?
My name is Souther Teague.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. So I'm a Malcolm. And
yeah,
so
I'm a Dunstan clan.
Yeah, on my mom's side. And so I grew up literally like wearing the tartan kilt when I was 3 years old. I have those pictures. My great uncle Mac played the bagpipes. We had, my great uncle Mac had West Highland Terriers. we are very, very, very Scottish Canadians. And in New York City, we don't really talk about the Scots very much. Mm-hmm. And so, but whereas in Canada, I feel like we always talk about our backgrounds and we're still a very young country.
Yeah.
And so when you think about it, and so we always say like, where are you from? And you don't say I'm from Canada. You say like, oh, well, I'm part this and I'm part that and everything. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I'm Scottish. And yeah. So I was raised with those Scottish roots. And so suddenly when I was introduced to Scotch whiskey, I felt connected to it because I was like, wait, this is where I'm from. This is my family. This is my family's history. And I was curious. I wanted to learn more. But then I also ended up having some really great brand ambassadors who taught me about Scotch whiskey, and they saw that I was curious and that I was interested, and they taught me how to appreciate my palate and discover things on my own, that it wasn't about like, here's your tasting notes and go, but oh, well, what do you smell? What do you taste? What do you think? And having that conversation and then starting to, I never knew it would spiral into this incredible career of continued learning and
sure.
and with from amazing people in this business.
Well, I feel like you got a unique, at that point in your life, you had a unique set of circumstances. You'd already traveled the world a lot, meaning you'd already exposed yourself to probably a lot of different flavors and aromas and textures. And
yeah.
Right? So you were at a place where you were like, maybe more so than someone else who just sort of spent their life living in their hometown. You had experienced more. So now when you look at anything, glass of scotch or anything at all, you have a greater appreciation of what may or may not be behind the curtain.
Yeah, that comes from my parents too, for
yeah.
sure. Because just like myself, my brother worked for the circus for 18 years and on the road mm-hmm. for about 15 or 16 of those years. But my parents both worked in the arts, and so they before having us as well, and throughout my childhood, they were on tour, they were traveling, and so they exposed us to. The arts, to the culture, to different languages, to different foods, to different flavors.
Yeah.
And so I feel really lucky that I was exposed to a lot of that, and at home as well. That's how my parents cooked.
Yeah.
And so, kind of picking up things here and there through their travels, things that they'd learned. And I mean, that's what we do through travel, right? You get
yeah.
to experience the culture, the flavors, the style, the heritage, the people, and learn from that, and bring that through your cooking, through your drink making, through
yeah.
your whiskey, through your everything, through olive oil, through all those things.
Storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, this is a great place to take a pause. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors here. It's Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Speakeasy with Souther Teague. I've got my very good friend Nicola Riskin in the studio with me. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Since the mid-1800s, before Wisconsin was even recognized as a state, its resident cheesemakers have been putting the art into artisan cheese. When early settlers from Switzerland, Germany, and Italy came to Wisconsin, they brought their cheesemaking expertise with them. They chose Wisconsin because the terroir reminded them of the homes they'd left behind in Northern Europe. The soil and water of Wisconsin is nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin's cheesemakers draw from their rich European heritage and cheesemaking traditions, and combine them with incredible innovation to produce half of the nation's specialty cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers never stop experimenting, trying to improve, and dreaming of your next favorite cheese that has yet to be imagined. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Katie Kiefer, and I'm the host of What Doesn't Kill You here on HRN. Every week, I sit down with journalists, authors, scientists, or activists to identify and explain some of the key issues in our food system. I've done shows on food waste, labor issues, meat production, water, you name it, I cover it. You can find What Doesn't Kill You wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague. I'm here in New Orleans, Louisiana, Tales of the Cocktail 2019 in my makeshift portable studio. I'm hanging out with Nicola Risk from The Macallan. Let's talk about scotch.
Sure, yeah.
We've talked about your, what got you to where you are now. And I think you have, again, a unique set of circumstances that bring a whole lot to you as a person. And now how are you applying that to the Scotch whiskey world? What are you doing with the Macallan in Madrid, Spain, of all places?
Yes, yeah. So, you know, of course, I was based in New York before. I've been with Edrington and the Macallan for a little over 7 years now. I know.
And that alone is a lot of long... Well, it does. Tempest, yeah. Fugit. That alone is a lot of longevity for your position in our industry, right?
Yes.
A lot of folks don't make it past like the 3-4 year mark. You're kind of double down at 7.
I am, yeah. I mean, I love it. That's the thing. It's. I know that this is a theme, but it's never-ending learning, and there's always something new to learn. And in this business, and with my brands, and in whiskey, and every single day, we're learning something new and being challenged and diving into it. And so, 2.5 years ago, nearly 3 years ago now, when Edrington, our parent company for the Macallan, they asked me and said, how do you feel about moving to Madrid to cover countries like France and Italy and Greece and Portugal? And I was like, yes, sign me up. That sounds incredible. I wanted an opportunity to bring our whiskeys forward and learn, study different cultures, work with different people in different countries, use my languages as well.
I was about to say, how's this translating for you for language? Because I know you speak French and English, obviously.
Yes.
What else? You got Spanish down yet?
I'm not. It's not down yet, but I'm learning. Sí, aprendiendo, and poco a poco. Sí.
Oh, I like your accent.
And so, gracias.
Oh, the little Barcelona drop right there.
So, I'm little by little, I am studying Spanish. What's interesting is, so I'm fluent in French. I studied being a Canadian. I studied in French immersion from age 5 on. However, bringing forward whiskey and like learning all of the technical jargon, whiskey jargon in another language was terrifying. It really was. Mm. Because you're already communicating in another language that isn't your first, and you want to get your point across, and you want to go into technical detail, and you want things.
And you're the expert on site at the moment.
Yeah,
right?
and whiskey aficionados, they want to go into all the little details, and so suddenly when you're
nerds.
Yes. Hey, I'm one of those nerds.
Me too.
Right?
So. I don't say it in a bad way. I just like to like. You're
whiskey
an aficionado
nerds,
of anything.
Me.
You're a nerd. Yeah. That's what you
yeah.
are.
And but going into the technical detail in another language is really intimidating. And so grasping the language and becoming comfortable with it was a huge challenge. And just getting into that flow with it. And then I studied German as a third language, but my German is very basic now. And so for 3 years...
A lot
years,
of compound words over there.
Yes, it's a lot of compound words. So I'm not using the German very much, but now focused on Spanish when I'm home. And I understand a lot more than I speak at this point.
Sure.
Spanish, Portuguese, and Italian. Yeah.
Ooh, Portuguese. That's like a tangled yeah. mess.
Well, my sister-in-law is Brazilian.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah. And so I have a little niece. Anyone who knows me knows that I talk about her all the time.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah. And she's 3. And 3 years old. And so I'm learning Portuguese with her. And so I'm always like, my Portuguese, I speak baby Portuguese. And so that's falo um pouco de português, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm working on it little by little again, but understanding a lot more. But the first 2 years, honestly, in Spain, at the end of the day, I was just exhausted. My brain from translating constantly
sure.
in all the different languages. When I moved over to Spain, I was given 14 different countries to work across. And not a single one had English, except for Ireland, not a single one had English as a first language. And so that was a great challenge, but I love it. It's an exhausting challenge, but what a wonderful opportunity to kind of...
Yeah, you're racing up on Chris Lauder for a number of languages.
Oh my
spoken.
Goodness. he's pretty on top of it, isn't he? With
yeah,
his Mandarin
just,
and everything.
An app. Like, I can't remember the app that
Duolingo.
He uses. Duolingo.
Did you do Duolingo?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. I've done some Duolingo. I've done some Rosetta Stone.
He has another app that's not even language. It's not even a language app. It's a a note card app.
Oh.
And you pile in the stuff, and then it makes you, it asks you questions about the note cards, but it'll slowly ask you less about the ones you always get right and more about the ones you get wrong.
It's like a flip card.
Something like that.
For
yeah.
studying.
We can reach out to Chris. Chris, tell us what app that was.
Please.
That's what he used to memorize all of his specs. That's what he uses to memorize languages, and he speaks English, Dutch, Mandarin, Japanese, Korean.
Are you serious?
Fucking insane.
Yeah, no, that's impressive.
That kid's nuts.
Anyone who's, I would love to learn as many languages as possible. I've always been a huge linguist, and I really appreciate when people speak multiple languages. I'm always impressed by it. And whenever I meet someone and I don't speak their language, I never think, my thought has never been, why don't they speak English? My thought has been, why don't I speak their language? Like, what is stopping me?
Right.
And so I'm like, I better add this to the list and start studying that language. And so, I'm working on it poco a poco.
Yeah, well, you know, little by little.
Do you speak any languages?
Yeah, English, not so well, though. I can also speak, Irish, Scottish.
There you go. Scottish is a tough one, actually.
Truth. So. Listening to my grandfather all my life. I can hear it better than I can say it.
I love it. Have you ever studied Doric?
No.
So up in Speyside, where the MacAllan is, and a number of whole up in northeastern Scotland, there's Doric,
mm-hmm.
and that's a whole other part of Scotch Gaelic, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a whole other language.
So living in Madrid and working for these guys for 7 years, though, you get to go up there pretty often, right?
Up to the new distillery, yes.
Brand new, right?
Brand new distillery and visitor experience. We've had that now for, it's been open to the public for just over a year. We just celebrated our anniversary last week.
Looking right now through my email, I don't see my invite to come over, but I'm sure it's in there somewhere.
Southern, please come. I would love for you to come and see the new distillery and take a wander through. Have you seen the photos?
Yeah. I follow you on all the media. I see you out there.
It's amazing. I always say that when I head up to Scotland, when I head up to our distilleries, I'm home. And it is my home away from home. Mm-hmm. And they're at the estate and everything.
Well, again, I think as a world traveler as you've been, you have a lot of homes.
True.
Right? You got your home in Canada, you got your home in New York, you got your home in Madrid, you got your home with the MacAllan, you got your home right here with me in New Orleans.
And I believe that also that's what shapes you. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, well, you know, you can only associate with your roots, but I think that you create, you know, your culture, who you are, is shaped throughout your life based on where you live and what you do and everything. And so, you know, I say, you know, I'm both Canadian and American now, and I'm slowly becoming Spanish.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Pretty rad.
That's part of my culture.
Citizen of Earth.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about some scotch. What's going on with the MacAllan?
With the MacAllan.
Yeah.
Well,
like to describe, you know, typical day in your life.
Oh gosh. So my day, I've been traveling around to various parts of basically Central and Southern Europe. I've been spending a lot of time in France right now. And as you know, the French love their whiskey as well. Mm-hmm. And so with traveling, I work with all of our different distributors and get to go out and teach whiskey, talk about my passion for the MacAllan.
Yeah, all that learning's paying off. Now you're an educator.
Yeah, and have those conversations. I think that, you know, I always say that talking whiskey, it's not a monologue, it's a dialogue. It's a constant conversation, and it's always changing. And I encourage that with everyone that I meet who wants to talk whiskey. Let's talk about it. Let's break it down. Let's understand it, because I think a lot of it can be misunderstood. There's also so much to learn, and so we should be asking questions. We should be having those conversations. And now I am lucky enough that, you know, I get to do that through sharing the story of the MacAllan, talking about our new distillery, talking about how the importance of oak and how it plays into our new make spirit, how it shapes our whiskies, how it creates something really beautiful in terms of aromas and flavors and natural colors, and exploring that. And also diving into the basics of whiskey, Scotch whiskey, and what that means. So.
Yeah, teaching is learning. You know, I've always thought that. I was a teacher myself for some years. I taught culinary at the New England Culinary Institute. And I think you know, every single day that I would go in and teach my students, they would teach me something. Right, I'm going to pick 100%. Up something from them. So I feel like those conversations lead to greater depth of knowledge. You know, enriches your viewpoint, even on a topic that you're the expert in. When you're talking to someone who's a total novice, you find something that enriches the way you think about it, right?
Yes, 100%. And I love that about you also, because you've always been, I think, such an explorer of flavors, of understanding them and breaking them down and how they play together and whatnot. And it's one of the things that I love with our conversations all the time, is diving into those flavors and those conversations.
Thanks. Yeah, when you lived in New York, we used to have some great lunches together.
I know,
in the
I
East
miss
Village.
Those.
Yeah, they're still there. Come on back. They're right there. Now there's new places to go. You know,
or come to Madrid.
Yeah, well, now, okay, two invites. Now,
we'll do tapas.
Now I'm invited to Spain and Scotland.
I love it. I love it.
I'm putting it in my calendar. So I'm going to ask a question that I wish I didn't have to ask.
Tell me.
What, if any, impact do you think it has on you, the position that you carry and being a woman? I think it's a conversation that I don't like having, but I feel like it has to be had.
Sure. Yeah, 100%. In the whiskey industry, in the industry as a whole,
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I feel like we're still in an age where people look at a woman and think, you don't know enough about whiskey. Where's the guy I'm supposed to talk to? Is that true? Do you feel that in Europe? Maybe it's not true in Europe.
It's interesting.
Did you feel that in America before you left?
I did.
Yeah.
I have. What's interesting is within the whiskey industry, we're very fortunate because it's actually very inclusive. Mm-hmm. And so within the industry itself, I've never felt like being a woman has ever prevented me from learning or doing anything. Everyone in this industry is very giving, very open. And so everyone from our distillery managers and master blenders and lab technicians and maltmen and mashmen and everyone has always been like, Nicola, you want to learn? Come closer. Come on in.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
If you're putting putting in the interest, we'll put in the investment, right?
Yeah, yeah. Throw on your steel toes and let's go and turn some malt. And I'm like, fantastic.
Yeah.
And towards the public, though.
I was about to say, that's internal. I feel internal, we're all very accepting.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think of you as like a woman who doesn't know enough about whiskey. I think of you just you're just a person who knows a lot about whiskey. Right? But that's internal. What about the external? What about the guests, the folks who show up to your talks and seminars?
With the public, I think that they're used to be a huge stereotype, and
so you feel
what's
it's slipping away.
Is that's changing. Yeah,
yeah.
In Europe, more than anything, people don't say anything about me being a woman. More so, they say, but you're not Scottish.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I look at them and I go, what? So if I have an accent, that's going to make me more authentic,
right.
Which I think is quite interesting. However, what I have learned is, having been in this business, though, for a long time, I have a responsibility to actually, I'm glad you brought it up, because I have a responsibility to have these conversations.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's really important that we talk about stereotyping, that
yep.
and that we break those down, and that we debunk those myths. Being in Scotch whiskey, my job is debunking the myths. When people are like, you can't add water to your whiskey, you can't add ice to your whiskey, you can't make a cocktail with a single malt, things like that. Those are myths that
Shout out to Jeff Morgenthaler for calling out those myths in his book, right?
Right? So, but the thing is that it's my job to debunk those myths every day. And I realized that I never knew that one of the myths that I'd be debunking is myself, me. Debunking, that only men drink whiskey, or that there's only men who work in the whiskey business. And that's simply not the case. That's not true.
No.
And I have a responsibility to bring that forward, and I'm proud to do that.
Yeah.
And I also think, thanks.
I think maybe sometimes you don't realize until someone tells you. You're a role model. I don't know if you know that.
Thanks. Well.
Like, there are ladies who are looking up to you. It's a fact. And guys too, but like you're a role model for women in this industry in general, but to be such a voice and a face of a category that's so stereotypically masculine,
right,
and you're this petite Canadian woman who's like out there talking whiskey all the time. That's great.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Thanks.
I'm super like proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks. I love it, and like I really do, and I think that having those conversations are just about being a woman even in this industry.
Yep.
It's so important because I often see younger women, and we've had these conversations where they struggle with situations. And you know, whether they're being, you know, someone discounts them for being a woman and says, well, where's the bartender, you know, and those kinds of situations. And I think that it's really important that that we don't react on the defensive. For me, that's how, you know, when I get challenged, when I'm put in a challenging situation, it's about having empathy, leaning in, listening, and handling things with grace under pressure. And understanding.
That's Ginger Rogers, right? You're doing everything Fred did, but you're doing it backwards in it. Right?
Trying my best, so.
I think you're doing all right.
Thanks.
Tell me the thing that brings you the most joy from your job.
Oh my goodness.
Besides drinking lots of whiskey. Lots of rare, unusual whiskey that I'm sure I'm never ever going to see in my life. You probably have gallons of.
No.
Not all at once.
Always responsibly, Sutter.
I said, not all at once.
Come on.
7 years, you've had some gallons.
I have had the opportunity, definitely, to taste some exquisite whiskeys, which, yes, is a wonderful thing with this job. But I would say that, and I've said this before, but in this business, it's the liquid that, that brought me here, that brought me into this business. It's the people that keep me here.
Oh, man, I love that.
And, like, it's true. Again, it's a fantastic industry where we're always learning from one another. Mm-hmm. It's, yes, you know, I like to be in the classroom and everything, but really I find mentorship and peer-to-peer learning. I'm a huge believer in peer-to-peer learning and supporting each other and again, having those conversations and whether it be about being a woman in the business or whether it be about how to build a certain cocktail or whether it be how whiskey is made or talking about distillation or talking about citrus or whatever you're exploring or how to handle finances behind the bar, anything. It's that learning that and that connecting with so many incredible people.
Yeah, we're so very fortunate to have an industry that we're involved in that's so open to that too. You know, I don't think we'd have so much peer-to-peer learning if we were a bunch of accountants. You know, those guys can't call each other up just out of the blue and be like, hey man, I saw your Instagram post about that thing you did. Can you tell me how you did it?
Right.
They're gonna be like, get off my line, dude.
I never thought about
that. But bartenders are like, sure, this is what I did. Oh my God, it's so rad. Thanks for reaching out.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a, it's an amazing industry. And again, it's that, things like Tales of the Cocktail this week, I find so much inspiration, connecting with everyone here and learning and seeing everything that's being done and really like inspiring each other to see that, you know, we have the power, we have the ability to make differences in our lives and other people's lives and in helping each other out. And it's, yeah, it's the people that keep me here.
Yeah,
it's
I love
beauty.
That. I'm gonna use that. Well, this seems like a great place to wrap up. Nicola, what a great session sitting here with you.
Thank you.
Balmy New Orleans, Louisiana.
It is hot today.
Yes, it's hot. It ain't the heat, it's
hot,
the humidity.
Humid. Yeah. It's true.
Or as we used to say when I lived here, it's not the heat, it's the stupidity. If someone wants to reach out to you and talk to you about whiskey or olive oil or just learning languages, how can they get a hold of you if you want them to?
Oh, Instagram. I think you and I both on our Instagrams. That's nrisk, so N-R-I-S-K-E. Feel free to send me a note anytime, as well as LinkedIn, Facebook, all the social media outlets and whatnot. But my door is open. I'm always like, if you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Again, and if I don't have the answer, I'm really lucky. I work with some incredible whiskey makers and people who have far, far more experience than me, and I get to turn to those experts and ask them a lot of questions as well. So
yes, you're like a direct line to the core of the knowledge.
Yep, exactly.
That's outstanding. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me and talking at Tales of the Cocktail 2019.
Thank you, sir.
Let's get off the air and chat for a bit, and I know you got stuff to go do, but it was a real pleasure having you on the air with me.
You're fantastic.
Cheers.
Thank you for this.
Thank you.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you.
for our freshest content and learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.